If you would have told me on Monday when beans were down 20 that they would close up on the week, I'd have called you crazy. So let's get crazy.
Live from a Friday of fading friendliness via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome Marine for Life, Brian Split from AgMarket.net. And right after the news, I will update you. The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. I've got a very special one for you today, Planet Earth, by the way, if I can just break from the script. So you're going to want to stick around for the fourth segment. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, now filling in for Fish Guts Flory, the Chi-Town guy who's anything but shy. From Zaner Ag Hedge, the original wild stallion, Ted Theodore Cypred.
Yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I thought you were going to say Logan, and I was going to be perfectly fine with that. But yes.
I thought about it. And I actually did look for a little clip of Bill and Ted going, Ted, it's us again. But I couldn't find it. So
that's fantastic. You know, yes.
We're starting off in a deficit already.
I've gotten that reference pretty much since I was like 12. So
is that right? Wow.
Well, yeah. You know, that and Teddy Ruxpin. You remember the talking bear?
I do. Yes. Yeah,
I got that a lot when I was growing up. That was... Yes. So, I mean, it's something where when your first name is just kind of a nickname anyways, it's pretty easy to, almost like I'm daring people to make fun of me. It's like, I've heard them all already. Go for it. Why not?
What do you got? Bring it on.
Well, you know, and then there was that now defunct airline, the Ted airline. And then you've got the Ted Talks that,
of course,
you know, whatever. And then you got the movie with the other talking bear, Ted, which has always been good.
Why am I hearing music? Is there music playing? Do you hear that? Is that me?
Yeah.
Is that in my head? Where is that coming from? Joe? Big Apple Joe.
He said, let's go crazy, so.
Let's go crazy.
Absolutely.
Little Prince on a Friday. Love it. As I grab my third cup of coffee, this is exactly what I needed today. Thank you very much, Joe.
You know, speaking of Prince.
Ding.
Yes.
Rolling Stone just recently put out a version of Prince's big hit, I Could Never Take the Place of Your Man, that he had actually recorded, I believe it was in 78 or 79. It's terrible. Oh. I don't care for it. It's no good.
No.
He did a much better job with the second time around on that one.
You know that happens. So
It does.
Word for it. I'm a mild Prince fan. I can tolerate Prince. Let's go with that. That's a couple gin and tonics and I'm good to go, right?
Oh, well, there you go.
Anyways, so what, any big plans this weekend, Davis? And thank you.
Yes, my niece is getting married, and she has enlisted me to play the piano for the ceremony. And so I'll be playing
fantastic
while the grandparents are being seated, and then while the bride comes to the altar. I'm a little bit nervous. It's been a while. The last wedding that I played for, I actually played and sang Joe Cocker, Love Lift Us Up Where We Belong, while the bride was walking down the aisle. That's been a while ago.
Davis, but I got to say, I didn't realize you were such an accomplished pianist.
Well, accomplished, we'll see.
I mean, playing a wedding, it's a big gig. I'm excited for you, man. That's really awesome.
You know, and I'm trying not to think about, like, because a lot of people haven't heard me play. I used to play in church all the time, but I, you know, haven't done that for a long time. And I haven't played piano in front of people since that wedding before, and before that it was years. Gosh, I mean I think expectations are fairly high. I don't like that.
Yeah, you should try not to think about that. That's a good idea. And in the meantime, I'm gonna try not to think about the word pianist. So
yes, thank you very much. Piano player, if you don't mind.
Piano player. Piano man. Yes, Davis is the piano man. I like it. Well, you know what, Davis? You wear many hats in the office, and the other one is the handsome newsman.
That's right.
And it seems to me that I feel like we had some news today.
David.
Do we have any news?
We had a little wheat futures firmed to multi-month highs earlier this week, which gave way to profit-taking yesterday, and that trend continued in today's trade. The price spike during the previous week brought importers to the table to buy U.S. wheat, but traders suspect the higher prices spurred by encouraging sales priced U.S. wheat out of competitiveness in the world marketplace. Gains in corn and soybeans late this week limited selling interest, as did declining crop prospects in Argentina, the Black Sea region, and in the European Union. September hard red winter wheat unchanged today, 448 and three quarters. September soft wheat fell a half cent to 534 and three quarters. September spring wheat softened 2.5 cents to close at 5.12¾. Same old story here, Ted, where we price ourselves right out of the market, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, we like to do that with wheat, and it likes to do it in a hurry. So, yes. But, you know, let's go back to the conversation we were having with Karen Braun on Wednesday. Argentina is losing a little bit of acreage, but we might be picking all that up and then some in Australia. So, you know, that realization, I think, is kind of coming to the market. And also, we ran into big technical resistance. I'm glad we didn't fall apart on Friday. We'll have to see what next week looks like.
So you're saying it's Karen's fault? I buy that. Sorry, Karen. Buying interest in corn futures was tempered by forecasts for less threatening near-term weather in parts of corn country. However, dryness is expanding in some other areas of the Corn Belt, and in those areas, extreme temperatures are expected over the weekend. Other areas of the Midwest are forecast to receive rains, including some heavy showers, possibly in Iowa. On the week, daily sales alone tallied more than 3 million metric tons, with another million-plus tons reported in USDA's export sales report. Still, the upside remained limited in today's trade. September corn futures, 2¾ cents higher, 333. December corn, 2¼ cents higher, 339¾. March corn closed at 349¾, up 2 cents on the day, Ted.
Yeah, what a bipolar week we had there for corn. You know, you had the weather, big rains, you know, the end of the weather market for the most part. You know, that was weighing heavily, very heavily on corn. But at the same time, we had these really wonderful, fantastic sales, specifically to China. And that is good news. Can we transition this corn market from a weather market to a demand-driven market? If that's the case, we could have good news for us in store for corn. I'm a little skeptical. I'm not sure about that. I think we're going to need a lot of help from the soybeans, but we might get that.
Well, soybean futures were mildly higher today. The story here is very much like that of corn. Daily sales reported by USDA were solid throughout the week, totaling around 1.2 million metric tons, with China as a notable buyer. Crop conditions were placed above average, and traders will be watching next week's crop condition update closely for signs recent heat and dryness have taken their toll on yield potential. August bean futures 4.5 cents higher, 898. September beans firmed 4 cents, 892¼. November beans closed at 895. Even that's up 4 cents today, Ted.
Yep, you said it, buddy. We are going to be watching the weather very closely for soybeans and yield potential. In my opinion, we did not plant enough soybean acres. China is buying. If we don't hit trendline yield, we are going to have a very tight soybean balance sheet. And I think we can see some fireworks here. I am encouraged. I really love how we closed the week here. On a positive note, a positive week, when we started it down 20 cents and we spent the rest of the week coming back. That was great.
October cotton was 87 ticks lower, 62.01. December cotton fell 60 points to 61.94. And on the livestock side, cash cattle prices were generally steady with last week, and August futures firmed to a premium to the cash market. That put a lid on futures today, which sported just slight gains to end the week. August live cattle futures were steady at 103.27½, and December cattle firmed 60 cents to 110.70. August feeders gained a dime to close at 142.70. And on the snout side, lean hog futures retreated today on profit-taking and lower cash and cutout values. Large slaughter runs are helping to clear backlogged animals, but it will take a bit longer to clear the surplus. August lean hogs, 85 cents lower, 52.80. December hogs off 57½ cents, 52.27½. Ted Seifried.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we didn't have a huge update in the cattle complex today, but I really like how we held our ground after Thursday or Wednesday and Thursday. Come on back to next week, buddy. We'll be talking to Brian's play.
No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize the National Corn Growers Association for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Oh, yeah. Matthews, good job, Jim. Rocking it out on a Friday. Well, Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried from Zahner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory. What'd you say, Fish Guts Flory?
Fish Guts Flory. And actually, do we call you?
Because we all know that's what he's doing right now, right? I mean,
right. That's what he's secret. Doing. That's what he's doing. Let's not kid ourselves.
Good for him.
But but you're going to be Tennis Court Ted.
Tennis
if I'm not
court
mistaken.
Ted.
You got the rematch coming up already. This guy sounds like he wants it bad, buddy. Oh, rained out earlier. Now already a rematch this weekend.
Yep, that's I think the day after was like, hey, Saturday, 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. We got
Whoa.
This. Like, okay, so
yikes,
we're doing this.
All right.
Yeah, I mean he's I think 32 years old. I think he played tennis for the University of Michigan. He's legit. Mm-hmm. I am not. I started playing tennis last year. Mm-hmm. But we're gonna give it our all. I've got a strategy. You know, I am. I'm in a little bit better shape than he is. I'm a little faster. I'm a little stronger. And I think he knows that. So I think his intentions are to go out there and hit the ball as hard as he can to match my power and my speed. And I'm going to do the complete opposite of what he's expecting to do. And I'm just going to basically just get everything back to him at lower 80% power and just let him mess up when he's trying to overhit. That's
just
my plan.
Rely on your conditioning. I like that.
And,
I like that
and
a
also
lot.
My serve. I'm going to use my serve as my offense, and then I'm going to be a backboard and just hit everything back to him and let him mess up. You know, we'll see if that
Why
works.
Why don't you jump on the team and come on in for the big win?
Yes.
Semper Fi.
Yes. If that doesn't work, well then, yeah, I don't know. The first 5 minutes, it could be all over. So, yeah. But I've said this a couple of times. I've decided I really like the game of tennis as opposed to golf. I know everybody really loves golf, but for me,
I don't care for golf. Yeah,
I have such a hard time. I'm a lot better off hitting a ball with a stick when I'm running at full speed because I don't have time to stand there and overthink it like 20 times. Whereas golf, like I'll think about it forever and I'll still hit the ball like completely the opposite direction of where I was trying to shoot it. And it's just not my thing. It's just
golf
it's,
will break
I've
your
tried.
Head.
You know, it's not my thing. So tennis it is. Anyways, Davis, thanks for reminding me of the butt kicking that's headed my way here
Roger
tomorrow.
That.
So, yes, Roger that. Anyways, so well, happy Friday, everybody. And, you know, today our guest is Brian Split. He is at agmarket.net. Brian and I have been friends for a while, and I really appreciate his opinion on the market. So I'm excited to get into this conversation. Brian, how's it going, man? How's everything?
Good.
Been a while since I've seen you, but
super excited to talk strategy with you guys. I didn't know it'd be talking strategy of battling 32-year-olds on a tennis court, but strategy nonetheless.
I'll take all of the advice I can get, my friend.
I have no advice for you for tennis at all. Just do your best, Ted.
Have you been getting a solid tan so far this summer? Is that do you have advice for that?
I would say I have a tan, like a lot of the people listening to this this show, is what you'd call it. My arms are awfully tan and my neck, but that's about it.
Yes, the Farmer Ted tan. I'm with you. Yes, that's what happens when you play tennis. That's or farm, or really, yes, if you're wearing a shirt outside, that's what happens. So good. All right. Well, we're all on the same page. That's good. It's comforting. No, we're all in the same boat. So very good. Anyways. We should probably talk about some markets. It was a very interesting week. As we were saying in the intro, kind of a bit of a bipolar week where you had a changing sort of weather outlook, although really the GFS model kind of had it right the whole way. But at least the market mentality on weather changed this week. At the same time, we saw quite a bit of sales of things, really everything, to China. So you've got kind of two conflicting inputs coming in this week, and the net result was kind of mixed, but you like what soybeans did. So what do you think? I mean, let's start with corn. You know, obviously we took a lot of premium out there earlier in the week, but we were able to kind of try to claw our way back towards the end of the week. What do you think about corn? Where do you see us going?
I think corn right now is going to be battling between what I think is going to be very good, steady demand. I think we could, if you want to, talk about why our group feels that something changed in China, and China's going to be here longer than just a couple token purchases. Or I wouldn't even call them token. I mean, these are great purchases, but we think
definitely
there's more
great
to come.
Yes.
But we also have a crop that, at least from what we can tell right now, looks like it's going to turn out very well, and we're going to have some cumbersome balance sheets to deal with. And so I think right now we should have a good invisible hand of support under the market. But I think it's going to take an awful lot to get corn to make new highs above the summer high that we've made so far, which was that 363 December high. So I could see a sideways range where we're kind of trading bullish information at some times, and maybe we're traveling towards the upper end of the range, and at other times we're in a little bit more of a bearish influence at the lower end of the range. But I think something you had mentioned is that, you know, the soybean market is probably our best hope right now of pulling corn back up in the short term. The soybean balance sheet is a lot more delicate. We're just coming now into the time frame where the soybean market's going to be the most sensitive to weather in both directions. And so I think if we could have a similar kind of a forecast of hot and dry as we get into the beginning of August, then the soybean market will have no choice but to react to that, just because we really cannot afford to lose much production based on the balance sheet. You know, you lose a bushel or two off a trend, and when you think about the amount of production you're losing if that happens, and what percentage of our expected carryout that loss equates to,
right,
that just moves the balance sheet very quickly.
Absolutely. And when you don't have, in my opinion, enough acres, if you didn't plant enough acres in soybeans, it really comes down to yield. So that yield and the weather is I think this is we should be as sensitive to weather and soybeans as we really have ever been, in my opinion. And look, let me ask you this, Brian, what if we add 2 bushels to the soybean national average yield? Let's say we're 51.8. That'd be 2 bushels, right? Because we're currently at 49. Yeah, right. So 51.8.
Yeah.
What happens then? What's the balance sheet look like in your mind?
Well, it definitely doesn't look like we need to go up much if that's the case. And if weather is seen as a negative influence, I think that's even soybeans will be more sensitive to the downside than corn should, if that's the indication, if we're adding a bushel or two. I think we'll maintain very good support at $8, so I think the overall downside is probably limited. So I think, put it this way, the amount of downside that I think we would see on a 2 bushel increase in yield is much less than the amount of upside I think we would see if we saw a 2 bushel decrease in yield.
You see, I kind of have a bit of a different opinion there. I agree with you that I think the downside is fairly limited for soybeans. But I almost think if we had a two bushel an acre increase, it's certainly not bullish on the production side of things. But I just get the feeling that we are really understated as far as what our expectations are for demand next year. I think the crush demand is right on that, and I don't think that's going down. Even if we do have a dollar rally in soybeans, that crush demand I feel like is very solid. It's going to happen one way or the other. But I look at the exports that we have on the books. I look at what China has been doing, and you said something a moment ago that I want to come back to here in a second. But I look at the sales that we have on the books for new crop soybeans. And then I look at the USDA's estimate for exports for next year, and it doesn't jive for me. We are strong. We have export sales on the books that are well beyond what we were seeing in 2017, which you can throw last year out, because last year with the trade war and everything like that, we were off to a terrible start at this time last year. I think the best analog year is 2017, but we have surpassed that now by almost 3 million metric tons. Yet the USDA is looking for an export number that is 100 million bushels lower than what we saw in 2017. So I think there's an extra 100 to 150 million bushels on soybean export demand that's not being reflected. So I think we need to see a higher than trend line average yield to be in a comfortable position to soybeans to keep prices in the range that we're in right now. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it all depends on what the Chinese are going to continue to do. Now, you said earlier that your group sees a change in China, that something has changed. Obviously, this week is an indication that very well might be the case. But what do you guys see that's changed?
Well, I'll tell you, I think there's three things, but I was waiting when you were talking about all that stuff to hear where we disagreed, and I don't know where we disagreed. I think we both kind of thought the same thing.
Okay.
my sentiment is additional yield.
I just don't see a lot of downside.
Is less aggressive than losing yield, much more aggressive upside potential than downside potential with a two bushel swing in either direction. Right. So I think we agree on that point. So what changed in China? I think first there's a realization that you've got rising domestic corn demand, and we've had a long drawdown in old stocks to where we could be potentially near deficit levels, and you can't reverse that right now. So The idea on the size of the deficit for the 2021 range from maybe 14 to 30 million tons, somewhere in that area. And it's always hard to talk China because you really don't know what's going on over there. But what we do know is that they have, over the last 7 weeks, have sold 100% of what was offered at auction and have probably cut the stocks to maybe 28 to 30 million tons.
Brian, hold that thought.
They continue to sell. That darn music.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all right. We're gonna come right back to this in the next segment. So everybody, stay tuned. Come on back to AgriTalk. We're talking to Brian Split. What's the news that matters most today?
Well, Ted, the U.S. for the first time recorded more than 70,000 new coronavirus infections in a single day, led by Texas and Florida, which each tallied more than 10,000 cases. The U.S., U.K., and Canada accused Russian hackers of trying to steal COVID-19 vaccine data. Attorney General William Barr on Thursday called on U.S. companies to reject doing business with the Chinese Communist Party, saying it is on a multi-decade mission to supplant the U.S.-dominated capitalist world economy. Refineries filed 6 more requests to EPA for retroactive exemptions from mandates to use biofuel, bringing the total requests to 86. And the Creighton University Rural Main Street Index July reading represented the 4th straight month with a reading indicated recessionary economic conditions. Hey, why don't you go to tryprofarmer.com right now to find out more about these stories and much, much more.
Do it.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifried, Zaner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory here on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. And for the most part, I think it is a fairly happy Friday. I feel like the market's had a pretty good showing the second half of this week. And even though not everything closed higher on the day, I think the things that didn't, they held. And so to me, it's a sort of a warm and fuzzy feeling going into next week, as long as we don't get a big change in the weather forecast, because we know... That's the warm and fuzzy. That's the thing that can really affect markets at this time of year. So we shall see. But in the meantime, we've been talking to Brian Split of AgMarket.net. We were talking about the change in China. I kind of led him into that question with not enough time, so we're going to start that over because as soon as he said that at the beginning of the last segment, I really wanted to kind of hear what his thoughts were on that. So before we do that, I know we're all itching for it, but let's go to a quick market recap with Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson.
Sure thing. Well, September hard red winter wheat unchanged, 448 and 3/4. September soft red fell a half cent to 534 and 3/4. September corn futures 2 3/4 higher, 333. December corn 2 1/4 cents higher, 339 and 3/4. August soybean futures 4 1/2 cents higher at 898. November bean futures closed at 895, even up 4 cents on the day. October cotton 87 points lower, 6201. August live cattle futures steady, 103.27 and a half. August feeders up a dime to close at 142.70. And August hogs were 85 cents lower, 52.80. There, get me out of here, Ted.
Yes, give him a break, folks. He's got a lot on his mind. He's got a big gig coming up this weekend.
That's right.
Hopefully it's going to be on YouTube. I'll be looking for it. So fantastic. All right. And without further ado, let's go back to Brian Split of AgMarket.net. Brian, I kind of threw you under the bus there because I didn't give you enough time for the question that I asked you. I didn't realize it was a 3-part question, but I got to tell you, man, I'm dying for the answer. So if you don't mind, can we start over with that? And the question is, what do you guys see that has changed with China?
Okay, so to sum up part one, which I almost finished, was that they've been selling an awful lot of corn out of their state reserves, 100% of what's offered every week, 7 weeks. We think it's cut their stocks down to around 28 to 30 million tons, and they've said that they're going to continue selling those stocks. So at present rate, nothing says it's going to continue at this present rate, but their stocks would be gone by early September. So not going to happen. They're importing corn. But when you look at how much that they've typically bought, you know, maybe 2 to 3 million tons, mostly from Ukraine, to now roughly 5.5 million tons this year, that's a big jump, and you can't ignore that. So second, I think food security and food safety are major factors in Chinese daily life. When you think about us here and we talk about, you know, the mask debate and our freedoms being infringed on because you got to wear a mask, that is not even a thought process in China. They need food security. So when you think about what's happened with African swine fever, the loss of pork supply, lack of trust in domestically produced meat quality after learning about imported meat, that shows the consumers there what they don't have. You've got consumers fear lack of rice during the winter, hoarded bags of that. Wheat flour supplies ran short, even in the face of massive wheat stockpiles. And you've got corn feed manufacturers worried about not having sufficient corn for rising feed demand. So COVID lockdowns forced consumers to examine their food supply, the food quality, and I don't think they like what they saw. So I think food security is a driver of government policy. And I think third, China wants to meet its phase one commitment to the U.S. I don't know if I can make a case that they're going to meet their $40 billion target, and I'm not arguing that these purchases are bullish for corn futures prices, but I think that the recent buying is at least partial evidence of compliance with the phase one framework. Frankly, I don't care if it's the phase one or the other two that we mentioned. I'm just very happy to see China in here in a big way, and if it would be really great if we could have a new buyer of substantial amounts of corn that has not been in the marketplace for a while.
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is that corn, and possibly rice, is their toilet paper, which, yeah, we all know how that worked out here. So, hey, that's good. That's good for us. Let's keep selling. Let's keep selling to them. So I guess my question is there a point where we can sell enough corn to China, or really anybody, to where we start getting excited about the corn balance sheet?
Well, so I think a lot of that excitement, it's going to be tough to get really excited about the prospects of old crop rallying substantially just based on demand. We know that demand rallies are kind of that slow and steady stair step type of a demand rally.
Realizing market,
Your drop in supply, those supply reduction rallies that happen quickly, those are the fast and furious ones. So I think as a longer term thing, could we have very well made a major low, multi-year low in corn? Could we have potentially seen the largest carryout numbers for corn when USDA printed in May the 3 billion bushel plus carryout estimate? Very potentially likely. And so now what do we have moving forward when you look at December of 21 and sitting here at, 367, what kind of acreage are we going to be looking at next year? And that's where I think the excitement potentially comes back in. If we see a reduction in acres, we see like what you had mentioned for soybeans, we just don't have the soybean acres. And I think that was the best part of that June 30th report was seeing the corn acres come down, but not seeing the bean acres go up accordingly.
Exactly.
So now are we going to have that scenario next year where we have really solid demand built into this thing? The enders are used to having low prices, and then next year we don't have the acres. And if there is a story, and even if it's a story like this year where it just appears like it could be hot and dry for a couple weeks, if the balance sheet is more sensitive and you're talking less acres to deal with a lower yield potential, the market's going to be a lot more explosive next year. So I think over the long haul, we could potentially in the short term see a sloppy futures market. Basis may be doing the heavy lifting along with spreads. And then as we kind of see how much of this crop that we're working through, maybe things look a little bit brighter, 9 months, 10 months down the road as we're kind of getting worked into next year's balance sheets a little bit heavier.
Okay, so with all that being said, if this is a slow rolling, realizing market, a demand-driven market, what would your advice to producers be at this point? Hopefully not so much on old crop, but, for this current crop that's in the ground, and are you looking out into December 2021, two crops away?
Yeah, I mean, always keeping an eye on those future values. We had some opportunity recently in DEES 21 at 380. Is that opportunity, maybe it feels like it right now. Any other year, I think you would turn your nose up at 380 at this stage of the game. But I think producers look at 380 right now and say, all right, with 380, if I could roll some of that to July of 22 and get, 405 or 410 July and have some $4 sales to kind of to start – then maybe you nibble at that a little bit, but I have a hard time getting too aggressive. I think in the short term, you know, something that I've had very good success with over the last several years has been selling straddles in fall time frame.
Yep.
You know, option premium is not that exciting right now, but kind of when you look at where the market is and where it's been, for example, a December 330 straddle, okay, if you could sell that and then buy a $3 put and have that all as one position and collect 30 cents for that, your upside break even is 360 because you're going to have 30 cents plus your 330 strike. So it's going to be your upside break even. That's 3 cents off the July high of 363. Your downside break even without buying that put is $3. But if you own a $3 put, you have coverage at what would normally be your downside break even. So if this market did just kind of meander around for a while, and we know that with crop insurance, there's kind of this weird area where between like 330 to 350, 360, no one's really getting paid anything. So while the market maybe does go down in the short term as we deal with these old crop bushels going into the expiration of September, I can't help but wonder if as we go into October and we're making that fall average, if things cycle back up to where that crop insurance payout, you know, just doesn't come to fruition. And we've seen that happen just time and time again where the market tends to have some strength in October. So I think even if we do go to some lower levels in the short term, it's likely that we're going to be hanging around, you know, somewhere in this vicinity. So having, you know, depending on where your sales are, if you have a way to take advantage of a sideways market but not get caught if the market falls apart and we do, you know, because burdensome supplies, maybe the yield for corn actually is bigger than trend. I have no idea. And balance sheets get bigger and we need to go below $3. We don't have to worry about having a loss on that position if the market goes below three, but you have to be okay having some bushels capped at 360 as well. And so it might be a part where you have, you know, a small portion of production, you know, tied to a position like that, where over the next few months, you just look for some premium decay into the account. Other than that, I think you really have to just be focused on your local cash market. I think basis is going to be very important this year. You know, if all of the potential of what we're talking about right now about having a very strong export market, I just don't think that the producer is that interested in selling at current price levels with the new crop. You know, old crop is a little bit different story because there's there's definitely a time constraint there.
Yes.
But for new crop, I think you've got basis and spreads are going to have to do the heavy lifting. So there's going to be opportunity here where for, you know, a short period of time, your local buyer, your merchandiser is going to be looking for bushels and there's going to be some basis pops. I think you have to take advantage of that stuff. And right now, you know, another position just conceptually to think about, you know, if you've got some woefully undersold producers that maybe need to have some coverage under the market, you could sell right now an at-the-money September short-dated call, and it would actually pay for two puts that are 10 cents below the market. So it's kind of one of those things where if you're thinking, man, I should sell 340 corn, well, maybe instead of selling it there, you do something like that, where if the market keeps going up, and I'll give you an example. Let's say you got 100,000 bushels of corn to market. You do that on 25%, the market keeps going up. You still have 75 to market, but you're going to have a floor under half of your crop on a ratio like that. So that's something else.
All right. Hey, Brian, you're the man.
Yeah.
That is a lot of strategy. I love how we're adding pennies to bushels. Thank you very much for your time here today. You have a great day.
Hey, Davis, I'll be thinking about your fingers this weekend, buddy.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'll take this.
In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert of Zahner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory here on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. And hey, I've actually got some breaking news coming in right now. Yes. Betsy Jivin from Ag Day sending me a link that was, it's a Reuters article, but maybe some good news for the corn market. Iowa senators hope to include biofuels in next COVID relief package. And actually, that could be good for soybean oil as well. And hey, soybean oil sure has been strong here lately. But this could be really good for corn and really helping propping up that the ethanol industry. That would be great. I see this as being good news. So thanks, Betsy, for sending that out and including us in the big news. Davis. Good job, Team Farm Journal. Hey, everybody, good job. All right. Well, Davis, we had a great time talking to Brian Split. I've had a really fantastic last 3 days doing this. I always love doing the show, but I really like when we've got a couple days strung together so we can kind of play some fun little games and, you know, kind of, you know, do a theme. And yeah, it's been good. It's been good. So thanks for having me, man.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. I know that you probably have way more important things to do than to broadcast to the 10 people who listen to this show occasionally. I mean, you know, and we appreciate them so much, all 10 of you. Thank you for tuning in. But yeah, thanks for taking the time, brother.
Hey, man, my pleasure. I love doing it. So anytime, anytime. Good. But hey, you know what? It's Friday, and that reminds me. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. It's fuels and vert time, right?
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report is a service of Pro Farmers Inputs Monitor for weekly updated fuels and fertilizer prices from across the Midwest and in your crop district. Visit profarmer.com. And now, Ted.
Yes.
The Friday Farm Fuels and Fertilizer Report. Very little action in this week's fertilizer and fuels updates price-wise. I even checked with my Geek Squad to see if the very sparse results that we got were correct. And they seem to think that, basically unchanged pretty much across the board. A little bit here, a little bit there. Really nothing that's even notable. Fortunately, I did have the chance to sit down with Josh Linville, Senior Risk Management Consultant from StoneX, formerly INTL FC Stone. I've got a longer interview with him posted under the Inputs tab on ProFarmer.com, but I want to play you some audio when he was talking about the wholesale phosphate markets. Stand by.
We've seen some moves in the wholesale markets on the phosphate side that seem worth noting. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you go back, you dial the clock back, it was probably late 18, early 19, when the market on phosphate really topped out here in recent years. And then it was a slow slide. And from a wholesale level, the prices in NOLA, which is where we track everything from a Gulf of Mexico or what we call NOLA. And so that topped out around $430. And then it was just a steady decline all the way down until we actually got sub 250. Now, a lot of that was due to grain market's not nearly as good as it was. It was due to poor seasons in a row. Application windows weren't there like they normally are. And so we just continued to build up supply. And then we also had imports that were continuing to gain more and more market share here in the U.S. market. It used to be that imports only accounted for a few percent of the overall phosphate market in the U.S. And now when you look at it, there's probably two that account for north of 20, 25% of that market. So it's really changed from a fundamental standpoint. So like I said, this last fall, we went into this with the anticipation it was going to be big. We were looking at big acres to be planted in 2020. Our application rates had been behind. So the anticipation was that soil levels were down. And so all this meant it was going to be a big, big demand. But the thing we didn't factor in was the fact that we planted last year's crop very late, which meant that the harvest was very late. In an early onset of winter, we didn't have a phosphate application. And so we loaded for absolute bear. And the season didn't happen. And so that's when we really started to fall out of bed. Now we hit that bottom. We started to see some production cuts here domestically in Q4 and Q1, which helped stabilize the market. And things started to rebound back around like a 280 number. Since then, things had backed off a little bit. And then we've seen some firmness going into spring season. And then we went back into kind of the summer lull. Summer is not a big phosphate demand point, right? So prices were starting to come back down again. But the interesting thing has really changed it here of late. And what you speak of here in recent weeks is prices have actually increased in a two and a half week period by $30 to $40 a ton.
Oh, wow.
And the reason is that a domestic producer has seeking countervailing duties against Russian and Moroccan imports, stating it's basically an unfair practice. They're saying that Russia should be looking at an 18% duty due to the fact that their gas input cost is different than others in the world, and it puts them at a disadvantage. For Morocco, they're asking for a 70%+ duty. And the reason for that is Morocco has centuries worth of phosphate rock reserves in their country, and the production arm is owned by the government, and the government is owned by the royal family. The royal family owns Morocco, and they want money. So they're basically sitting there saying, just produce this, ship it out, bring us the money. the domestic producers sitting there saying that's an unfair practice to a large, large extent. And that's why imports have started to shoot up. So since that announcement, the market is anticipating that on August 10th, we will hear a preliminary yes vote from the international community, from the domestic government regulatories, that this process can proceed. And so when this occurs, we won't have a final answer until probably Q1 of 21. These have a snapback clause. So we can't see these outside, like in Moroccan Russian tons, we can't see them just start slamming product in here because that would entitle them to kind of some revenge until that final answer. Mm-hmm. But the snapback clause means that the announcement was made on June 26th. And so every ton imported after June 26th, if it's an ultimate yes vote at the end of this and whatever that percentage is, every ton brought in by that since that date will be subject to that duty on basically have to back pay it.
Basically have to back pay on that duty. That gets a little deep in the weeds there, but I got to tell you, this conversation with Josh Linville from StoneX is absolutely fascinating. The sort of information that he brought up there, he was talking nitrogen, he was talking urea, he was talking potash, and even some ways to manage some risk in this environment here. Fascinating to talk to a wholesaler who is really super passionate about it. And Josh Linville from StoneX certainly was at gettoprofarmer.com. You can find that interview. It runs about 17 minutes under the inputs tab. Ted.
Yeah, buddy. Wow. That was great. That was some good information.
It was heavy
there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good. I'm going to go listen to the 17 minute version because that sounded fantastic. But
definitely,
hey, everybody. It's been a fun Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I've really enjoyed this week. I've enjoyed hosting the show, so thank you guys for listening and making this happen. Have a great weekend, everybody. Chip will be back on Monday, so stay tuned for that. Take care, everybody.